Today's episode of Rob is a Podcast is sponsored by NatureBox. This week's tribal council may have hurt, but maybe some dark cocoa nom noms take the sting off. Rob is a Podcast listeners can get 50% off their first order of great tasting, healthier snacks when they go to naturebox.com/RHAP. That's 50% off your first order of great tasting, healthy snacks from NatureBox at naturebox.com/RHAP. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's the guy who was notified via text this morning by JetBlue that I was officially a gate changer, Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast. Here I am back in the studio after a quick trip out east to New York to go see everybody at the Live Know-It-Alls this past week. And of course, what an episode it was, and what a week it was. A real whirlwind to get back after this 4-day trip. But very excited to get into your feedback from this very dramatic episode of Survivor. And based on the voicemails that we got, you guys are very focused on this twist and this tribal council and Malcolm going home. So we'll talk about your voicemails today here with Liana Boris, who was our co-host on the Hunted podcast with Kurt Clark. You met her during So You Think You Can podcast. We talked about Suri in the preseason. She's going to be on the RuPaul's Drag Race wrap-ups that are kicking off again very soon. So very excited to get into it with Liana. Of course, I had my interview with Richard Hatch in addition to the know-it-alls, my exit interview with Malcolm. And Richard really did come out swinging. He felt like that there was a lot of stuff Malcolm could have done differently. Very polarizing interview with Richard Hatch. A lot of people felt like that this was classic Richard. Other people felt like that Richard was too high on himself, which I don't know why anybody could be surprised about that. But I thought it was an interesting interview with Richard. Nonetheless, that's all up at robhasawebsite.com. You can make sure you never miss an episode by subscribing to the podcast. Go to robhasawebsite.com/iTunes. All right, everybody, let's bring in today's guest here on the voicemails. She is a first-time voicemail show guest, and also, you've been hearing her everywhere, she is Podcasting Quarterly's breakout star of 2017. Please welcome to the podcast, Liana Boris. Liana, how are you?
Hi, Rob. I'm doing great. I am just incredibly excited to be here. But much like Haley Ford, I did not consent to talking about this crazy, ludicrous episode.
Yeah. And you might not like it. OK, but you have to now. We might not like how it goes. Liana, how have you been?
I've been doing well. You know, I'm sure nobody really cares what I've been up to, but I'm also narcissistic enough to answer.
Not true. So. Liana, I hear from so many people that they enjoy hearing you on all the different podcasts. We talked about Hunted, that I heard you a couple times this week talking about Big Brother Canada on the Rehab Ups. And now this weekend, you will be added to the team of the panel talking about RuPaul's Drag Race with Mike Bloom and Brent Wolgamott on reality TV Rehab Ups.
Yes, that is true. Yes, queen. I have been all over the place talking about a million different things, but I am looking forward to talking to you about Survivor today and then obviously RuPaul's Drag Race when it premieres.
Okay, so excited for all of that, but we have some very serious business to discuss here with this episode. And Liana, it's such a polarizing, well, I don't even know if it's polarizing. I don't think there's anybody saying like, oh my God, this was great. I'm so happy Malcolm is gone. It's been a very angry week for the Survivor fans.
It has been one of the most dramatic, angsty weeks. That's perfect. It's like we're a bunch of teenagers and we're just upset and, you know, because like something bad happened, but we don't quite understand it. We just have lots of emotions and feelings and we're trying to wrap our head around it. It's just, it's been insane.
Yes, we're like grief counselors. And let's hear from some of the listeners about what they had to say and then we can start to respond. Here's Nate who left this message.
I'm going to vomit.
Yeah, he's not happy. Let's check in with our buddy Brendan Fitzy.
Hey, Robin, Liana, it's Brendan from DC. Giving you a call in the morning after Live Know-It-Alls. It was a wonderful night last night with one exception. With Malcolm going out, I need a little grief counseling. Can you help me feel better about Malcolm going home? What do I do? I know the the first step towards grief counseling is acceptance, but I'm having a really hard time accepting this. I'm wondering if you can help me out. Thanks. Bye.
Let me give you one more from Jessica Frey.
Hi, Rob. It's Jessica Frey, and I'm an alcoholic, and please tell me how I get over this grief. How do I get through the five stages of grief now that Malcolm is voted out? What do I do?
Okay, Liana, why don't you and I go the full distance here and talk through these five stages of grief for the Malcoholics that are out there?
Right. So if I remember correctly, the five stages, I think, are denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance,
yes.
I believe.
Yes. So let's take them one by one.
We're going to try and work through all of those five stages, and hopefully we can get to acceptance by the end of this podcast.
You know, again, if you're an alcoholic, I don't know if there's 12 steps you need to go through, but let's just go through these five steps of dealing with grief. And the first step is denial. I think we saw a lot of that happening on Wednesday night, certainly at the Live Know-It-Alls. Josh Wigler captured in that video where everyone in the crowd, we saw Jordan Parhar's reaction if you watched that video, saying, no, no, this can't be happening, even though Mike Bloom was pointing at Malcolm and laughing.
Okay, well, Mike Bloom,
he was not in denial.
Step down. Why don't you care about us, Mike Bloom? Yeah, I think we saw a lot of people just, I certainly was in that boat that just, no, this can't be possible. Is this really happening? But, you know, I think on, you know, everybody on their own is kind of working through this one. I hope that they're kind of past this denial stage, because I'm sorry, everybody. Malcolm is out of the game.
Malcolm is out of the game. The second step is anger. Now, we saw a lot of people taking this out saying that this twist was garbage. This was a bad twist to the game. A lot of people went to go visit the Survivor Facebook page, Liana, and to express that anger that they went there. And usually when they get to step two, there's always a lot of angry people on the Survivor Facebook page. But this week, people were especially angry.
Yeah, there's really nothing wrong with anger. It's okay to feel anger. Just try not to take it out on people online, on social media. Like, go for a run, go hit a punching bag. I mean, not a real punching, like a real punching bag, not like a person. But I think that that's probably the best way to work through all of your anger.
Yeah, here's a couple of the choice responses. A woman named Joanne says, tonight's episode was the dumbest move I've ever seen. They should just keep the money because no one deserves it at this point. The move was untimely and the real problem remains. Two-time winner who does absolutely nothing for the team dynamics, yet fools pass her by again. I mean, really, SMH. This is a woman named Kelly. So disappointed with that vote of the tribal. What a bunch of stupid people. They should just give Sandra the money and go home. Why waste time pretending that anyone else has a chance at winning? The queen got away clear again tonight. Jeez. And then Mikey writes, absolutely ridiculous how Malcolm is out before Ty and 90% of the rest of the castaways, quote unquote. This isn't a challenge show. The better competitor goes home week after week. And someone like Sandra, who couldn't find a way out of her paper bag, is still in the game. Boy, why does the Facebook page hate Sandra?
I don't know.
It's got nothing to do with Sandra.
Right. Like, this is not, I don't know. Maybe I missed something.
But people are angry. This is only, they're only at step two. Anger.
Right. They're only in step two. Yeah. I mean, well, you got to find, you know, somebody to take it out on. You got to find your scapegoat. And the woman who calls herself queen, I think, seems like a good scapegoat for everybody.
Yes. She's with heavy is the head that wears the crown, I guess.
That's true. Well, I mean, she's still busy with the paper bag. So just give her some time.
Okay. Step three is bargaining. Okay. Do you think that Survivor fans have reached bargaining where it's like, okay, well, look, Malcolm got screwed here, but he's probably going to play again. He's probably going to get another chance after. They have to give him another chance after this.
Yeah, right. I mean, come on. They gave Caleb another chance, right? Like, they're going to have to give Malcolm another chance. Come on. I think that's fair, right?
Yeah.
Right?
I found myself saying, like, boy, I really wish they had Redemption Island on this season.
Right. Never have I think I've ever thought that. Like, Tony goes out, oh man, I really wish they had a Redemption Island on this season.
Yeah,
maybe that's the point. Maybe that's what the producers are trying to do. They're like, ah, see, if we do all of these things, they'll want Redemption Island back.
Yeah, I do kind of think that it would soften the blow, though, a little bit, though. Okay, well, Malcolm is out, but now he has to go face off against Tony at Redemption Island. Like, I feel like it might, like, you know, I do think in these returning player seasons, I like the idea of the pre-merge Redemption Island.
Okay, yeah, I can see that. I think that's been discussed before, that do it for the pre-merge, you know.
Pre-merge.
And yeah, and then also you get another episode of at least, you know, the first boot. They get to stay at least two episodes, you get to see them on your screen. So I think that could be a smart call.
Okay, now depression is the fourth step. Is that where people are? They just say, "Oh my god. Tony's gone, Malcolm's gone, Sierra's gone. Is this going in a bad direction?"
I think most of the people that I have are at this stage. And I don't think that I'm the appropriate person to really help you get out of depression, because I would just suggest drink a lot, but I don't think that that's really what you
I think
should
that's also Malcolm's
advice. Oh, okay, good. Then we're on the same page.
Yeah. Do you think a lot of Survivor fans are feeling depressed now?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a lot of depression. Go outside, take a walk, try to remember the wonderful people that we still have left in this game. We have Troyzan. We have Haley Ford. How exciting.
Are you making people feel better, Liana?
Okay, I was brought on to be a voicemail guest, not a counselor. I'm a horrible person.
All right, the final step is acceptance. What do we need to do to accept the fact that Malcolm is gone?
That's a great question. I have no clue.
Let me start by saying
okay.
this.
Okay.
Malcolm wasn't going to win the game.
So
play
is it better
out.
To have him go-
play this
okay,
out.
All right.
Malcolm was
right,
not
we'll
going to win the game.
Oh, how dare you say
all
that?
All the
okay.
power
you know what?
Is with Nuku. There's only
yes.
one major physical threat that's from the other alliance. And that was Malcolm. This isn't going to be like Survivor Philippines, where people were going to forget about him. If not now, he would have been the merge boot in this season.
Yeah, I can see that happening. Or, you know, even if he's not the first merge boot, he goes a couple episodes into the merge. I just think that he, and not only is Nuku, the original Nuku tribe, in control, but he was on the outs with Mana in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So even if for some strange reason Nuku ends up falling apart, he's still out. You know, it was him and Aubrey that are kind of on the outs anyway. And so he's not really looking, I mean, he's not looking hot going deep into the game.
I mean, his best hope was that he befriended JT and that Brad Culpepper was tight with JT and they were going to take him in as another bro and they were going to keep other guys around as a meat shield. But Malcolm's the first one out of that group when it comes time to cut people from their own. And it doesn't seem like that's ultimately what Brad wants to do. JT was even betrayed by Brad at that tribal council. So JT isn't as tight with Brad. And if JT and Malcolm were going to do their own thing, they don't have any pawns that are on their side.
So for all you Malcoholics out there, I know that this is a difficult time, but Malcolm wasn't going to win anyway.
Right.
Wait, is that supposed to make people feel better?
In the preseason, sure, Malcolm looked good, but the way that this was going, I don't think that Malcolm was in ultimately that great of a position. I think that by losing Mana people time and time again, and I know that he was the first person to you know, go through everything with Matt Singh, and him and Denise ended up being under the radar, but he was never going to be able to get under the radar in this thing. And so for him, he would have either had to have gone on some Holloway-esque immunity run at the end of the game. There's nobody that is looked at as that much of a threat was ever going to be forgotten about. And he didn't have numbers, Liana.
Rob, I think what I'm realizing based on this conversation is that, one, you're my grief counselor. And two, I think I'm still in the bargaining or denial phase of the stages of grief.
And let me tell you this. If Malcolm does get to play a fourth time, this was basically the equivalent of that. If I suspect you're not a big online gamer, Liana, when it comes to like playing online Madden, But this was a game where, sure, he had a shot at it, but it was like he was down, you know, 7-0, 10-0 in the first quarter of the game. And he almost gets to push the reset button here. He gets to go out in a spectacular fashion in a way that he can walk away from and say, this was no fault of my own, and really ends up being guaranteed a fourth time to play if he wants it. He gets to walk away from this car accident that was coming 4-5 weeks down the road and avoids it and can say that this was not my fault. I deserve another chance. And who knows, maybe Malcolm 4.0, much like Boston Rob 4.0, ends up in the perfect situation where he actually can win the game.
Okay. I really like that argument, right? If this is the car crash, he gets to push eject. And because the fact that not only did he get idled out, but then there's also this twist involved. I mean, I think that's why we saw him have such a positive edit coming into this episode, is because the editors probably knew, oh man, people are going to think that he got screwed. And so then that, in the producer's eyes, might set him up to come back and have an opportunity to play again.
Just take a look at this. Like, what did Malcolm really have? He was clinging to JT. He was tight with Aubrey. He seems to have a relationship with Sandra and Jeff Varner. But I don't think that when we're taking a look at all of the chess pieces on the board, I don't think that's the winning combination for Malcolm.
Yeah, I think so too. And he talked about this. He also talked about having, you know, he wanted Tony to stay in, Tony went. He wanted Caleb to stay in, Caleb went. So his options and his game plan just started to completely fall apart and would have to change in order for him to really make a deep run, you know, to the end and to actually win this game. So, you know, if he's got to abandon the sinking ship, even if it goes this way, I mean, yeah, maybe this is the silver lining and this is what's best for him and will then encourage him to get an option or an opportunity to play again.
I think that maybe for Malcolm, the best case scenario might have been at the swap to go to a tribe with an Ozzy or with a Brad Culpepper and sort of like be in a diminished position and be able to paint himself as an underdog there, like we saw with Spencer back in Survivor Cambodia, where he went to the Bayan tribe and was able to like plead to Jeremy and to Steven, and they sort of like took him in under their wing and made him a part of the group that they had there, and then he was able to rebuild his position in the game from where he was at Takeo. But for Malcolm, that to go to a group with numbers, he was just seen as the guy over there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and he was seen as the strongest physical competitor over there. And I think, I know that you mentioned this in at KIA, but I have tweet evidence to say that I said this beforehand. But, you know, this was the first pre-merge boot. Mm-hmm. And he is the quintessential merge boot. And so to have him come out this episode, it's really unsurprising.
Okay. Liana, I talked with Richard Hatch on Thursday and we got into everything, and Richard Hatch was down on Malcolm and his performance, even though when I spoke with Malcolm in his exit interview, Malcolm said he felt better because there was nothing that he could do. Richard Hatch says there were millions of things that he could have done that he didn't see Malcolm trying, and he was not overly impressed with Malcolm. Where do you come down on this?
I mean, I understand. I listened to the interview and I could hear where Hatch was coming from, but that's almost like me saying, you know, you can do anything with your life. I am 26 years old. I'm already deep in a career. Yeah, I mean, I could quit and I could go be a professional cook, you know, because I enjoy cooking. But ultimately, what am I going to do? I'm going to stick with what I know, what I enjoy doing. And I think that that was a similar situation to what Malcolm found himself in. It was like, yes, there are a million things that he could have done. He could have tried to stand up and tell everybody this is our plan, or to grab other people, but he did what he thought was best in that situation. It didn't end up working out for him, but I would not put this on Malcolm.
Do we think that ultimately Malcolm might have been playing too tight this season, where he felt like, I just need to survive longer in the game? Like, in any way, do you feel like that Malcolm was afraid to lose?
I can see him being a little gun shy. He had talked about, okay, I'm just going to focus on all of my relationships and I'm not going to worry about you know, about making a lot of big moves. Like, I'm not going to push for Tony. I'm just going to stick around, hopefully build relationships. But I think that what we saw, what we just talked about, was that he was on the outs. And I don't think that that strategy was necessarily working for him.
Yeah, I wonder. And again, this is all results oriented because it didn't work out. But it just seems like that Malcolm was very content to sort of go with the flow here and wasn't really directing the action in the early days at Mana. Sure, he wanted Sierra to go home. But he said he would have rather have kept Tony, but he sort of just went with the prevailing wisdom of the what the house wanted to do, to use a Big Brother term, and let Tony go out of the game. Again, I don't know, you know, the butterfly effect on any of this stuff, but it seems like that he was very content to sort of just like keep his powder dry and just be in the game as long as possible. And then he was going to figure it out. I don't know what the specific thing he could have done differently would have been, that outside of the box thing. But let me play a theory or a suggestion for you from Nicolette, who has another idea for Malcolm, and I want to get your take on this.
Hey Rob, hey Liana, it's Nicolette from Edmonton, Canada. That twist was crazy, and although I'm not sure if I'm crazy about it, I do want to look at some strategies that tribes can use to get out of it. The dynamics are similar to seasons where those post-swap players aren't crossing tribal lines, and that, in this case, was encouraged by the fact that they were on the same beach before tribal. I'm sorry to have to mention Redemption Island, but Boston Rob handled a similar situation in a pretty ruthless way. The man, formerly known as Matt Elrod, came back from Redemption Island and was waffling between his former tribe, Ometepe, and Zapatera, who were down by one number. Zapatera was trying to sway Matt, but they also had an idol that they could play, which is similar to new Mana. What Robin Ometepe did was vote together for Matt, knowing that the idol wouldn't be played on him, and that would eliminate this kind of swing vote player. I see Nunuku in a similar situation with Haley. Maybe they wanted to work with her, but they weren't able to. And they knew that the idol wouldn't be played for her. Plus, JT would probably be comfortable voting with them in that case. Obviously, there's a lot of risk in this play, but I feel like for the two biggest targets, Sandra and Malcolm, this could have been a way to avoid the idol and keep their numbers. What do you guys think? Is this one of the emergent strategies that could have been used, or does it have some major drawbacks I'm not seeing?
Liana, I have to say, I think this is a pretty solid plan. What about Nunuku putting their six votes on Haley? I look at it almost like some sort of a standoff where they have one of their hostages. They've got JT and they're holding him hostage. And the other tribe has Haley. That's their hostage. And it's this big standoff here. And pop quiz hotshot, what do you do? What if they took out the hostage? What if they took out Haley Ford? She means nothing to us. Boom.
Yeah, well, I think that's exactly what Brad Culpepper talked. He said, you know, that in his business, they call it a Mexican standoff, which he's a lawyer.
I don't think that's
right?
A legal term. No.
Is that okay? I didn't think that was a common legal phrase either. It's like, like ex post facto, corpus juris, Mexican standoff.
No.
Yeah, that like fits in.
Objection, Your Honor.
Mexican standoff, not a legal term to be used in the
get
courtroom.
That out of here.
Taking out Haley Ford, I really do think that that's an option. There was a want to work with her later on, but if you're really that worried about an idol, and I think even in the episode, they said that they would never play the idol on Haley. It was, if one of the four of us is in danger, we're going to play it. And this might be a way to avoid the idol business and then get out of this sort of very complicated situation scot-free.
Yeah, I think it's such a smart play. I just don't know if anybody was thinking that way during the time, or if JT would have been willing to go along with that plan. But it just seems like that's the safest bet to get out of that scenario alive for Nunuku. And I just wonder if everybody should have been thinking about it more like, okay, what's the sure thing here? Take out Haley Ford. But then again, going back to, I think they thought that they were going to be able to pull her back to their numbers if they got to the merge.
Yeah, and they were already down, you know, from the original tribe numbers. I mean, the fact that we had so many Mana tribe members go out so early, if they were trying to hold on to Haley to keep her around longer. And, you know, I'm sure you could do the probabilities of if they have an idol, who's most likely to have an idol played on them. I think that they severely misestimated Ty's propensity to play idols for other people, which is interesting considering that Aubrey and him played on the exact same season, because they said that, oh, you know, fan favorite Sierra Dawn Thomas is never going to have an idol because she doesn't, she's never looked for idols or doesn't want to look for idols. Well, Ty loves looking for idols and he is a team player and he would be willing to play an idol for somebody else.
I think the thing that people will remember is that Ty didn't play the Hidden Immunity idol when he needed to for Scott Pollard, but he was willing to play it for Anna Kate. So he does have that gear where he's willing to share an idol with another person. So, you know, we think we know everybody based on like a small sample size, but, you know, there are a lot of different layers to these Survivor players.
That's true. You never know. I did think that we were going to have another Scott Pollard kind of moment when Ty was just sitting there. And I don't know if Ty realized that he was allowed to play the idol at that moment. There's just kind of this blank look on his face until Brad Culpepper was like, do it.
Yeah.
Do it.
Do it. Play the
go
idol.
Ty. Come on, Ty.
Yes.
Who wants it? Pretty lady.
Yeah. Okay.
Pretty lady.
I like that. Okay, let's talk a little bit about JT. And why don't I set the stage by giving you Humberto. He was very upset that he left a couple of voicemails. Here's one of them talking about JT.
Hey, Rob and Liana. This is Humberto calling very sad from Miami. I'm calling to say that this was JT's worst move ever. So the only possibility that he had to make another swap or the merge was for his tribe to keep on winning. Why risk it and get somebody out from his tribe that he doesn't know who it's going to be? And this way, now they cannot sit down one player in the immunity challenge. So you cannot sit down your weakest player, which will make your tribe lose. Even like if you have puzzles, you know you want to have Sandra in the puzzle at the end, so you will sit down the other second worst person. So this was just not a good move for him long term.
Liana, how bad of a move do you think this was for JT? Or are you like Stephen Fishback, who is a JT apologist, who thinks that, yes, it did not work out, but it was still a good move?
Okay, well, first of all, it sounds like Humberto is still in the depression stage.
Yes.
Of the five stages of grief, at least at the time of recording. So hopefully, you know, our walking through all of this was able to help you out. But secondly, was it his worst move ever? Maybe if he had written down, hey, we're voting for Sierra, love you, XOXO JT, and then handed that note to Brad, I think maybe that would have been his worst move ever. But the fact that he didn't write it down, at least he's now allowed to kind of, you know, afterwards deal with some of the aftermath of this. But ultimately, if we look at the move, no, I don't think it's a good move. I understand what Steven was talking about with, okay, you want to get Sandra out, but why not keep Sandra around in case you go to the next tribal council? We know that Aubrey and Sandra are having some sort of feud. And then you have Malcolm, who also wants to get Sandra out. So if you have at least the three of those, that gives you a fighting chance if you do end up having to go to tribal the next time.
This is something that I had seen on the Survivor Reddit this morning. And it looks like that there was a person that posted this named Very Naive. And it was retweeted, I think, by Ozzy. And it says, Dear Brad, read in complete privacy. This is a huge turning point in the game. Just from competing against you in the few days we spent together, I feel like I can trust you. All of my tribe are voting for Sierra. I think you should write Sandra's name down and send her home. Hopefully I can trust you and you are not truly a villain. XOXO JT.
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I was asked the question the other night on the Know-It-Alls of, did I see a comparison between Brad Culpepper and Russell Hance? And I have to say that not really, but that I do definitely see this comparison, especially when it is put this way, in that JT does seem to have this tendency to say, okay, I can get this other person that I don't necessarily know particularly well, or at least I think I know them particularly well, and I can get this other person to do what I want them to do, and they end up stabbing him in the back.
Yeah, I think this is just, I mean, not a character flaw in general, but maybe for the game of Survivor, of JT's willingness to just trust other people.
Yeah.
Because I genuinely think, I mean, JT is just such a trusting guy. And when he goes over to tell them that they're voting out Sierra, he does it in this, I think he says something like, I love you, brother, but we're voting out Sierra or something like that. It's because he cares about Brad. It's because he trusts him. And it's because he, you know, he wants him to vote out Sandra. It's just all about trust for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, he gets duped by somebody who he thinks that they're going to go ahead and they have mutually aligned interests. And it's just not the case for JT. Let me ask you another JT themed question. This is from Andrew from Toronto, who wants to talk about JT's legacy.
Hey, Rob and Liana, it's Andrew calling from Toronto. Since JT played his amazing game in Token Sheens, he's sort of run a path of destruction all through Heroes vs. Villains and through this season. I mean, he basically took down Stephanie LaGrosse and Tom by flipping on them. Then he got Ceree idled out, and now he's added Malcolm to his list of casualties. Has any returning player ever caused this much destruction during their return? Also, just want to say, Liana and Megan Z, you guys were the MVPs of the offseason on RHAP. The Hunted and Apprentice podcast were my favorite. Thanks.
Yeah. Liana, could you say, yeah, very nice. Thank you, Great. Andrew. Liana, could you speak to this trail of destruction that JT has left in his path over these last two seasons?
Yeah, JT is like the Survivor version of Godzilla. He's just climbing all over, destroying everything in his path. Or maybe the tornado of Survivor. I don't know. I'm sure I can think of more analogies if I have more time.
Yeah, I think he's the cooler.
The cooler.
Yeah.
More like the Kool-Aid man busting through the door.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, that's amazing. I haven't thought of it that way. He really has taken down a lot of, you know, strong Survivor characters and strong Survivor players.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. But JT's not going to get another chance.
Where will it end?
When will the devastation end? Oh, my gosh. We can do one of the like, Band-Aid, like, relief songs. For all of the survivors that were
affected by JT.
Affected by JT. I'm sure we can get you two. It'll be fun.
Some sort of like disaster relief theme song that we need to get going.
Yeah, exactly.
See if we can get Baylor Wilson on it to record it. Get all the survivors to sing like We Are the World.
Yeah.
We are the world apart.
Okay, good. Yeah, let's work on that.
Okay. All right. Let's go take another question about the we're so focused on the twist. Here is Taylor, who's wondering if we might be blinded to the benefits of a twist like this.
Hey, Rob, this is Taylor from Florida. Obviously, we're all disappointed about Mr. Survivor Malcolm leaving the show. But I guess what I'm wondering is, at that crazy special combined tribal council, was that a good twist that just had an unfortunate ending, or was it a bad twist that we really should never see again? Love the show. Thanks.
Liana, do you think that perhaps that the beauty of this twist is something that we're not recognizing because we are too focused on Malcolm being the person who went out?
Yeah, I thought about that too. I was wondering how differently this twist would be perceived depending on who went home, right? So like, let's say we lost a tie instead of Malcolm. And I think that there would be at least an initial change of opinion somewhat, but I do think that when the twist was first announced, I mean, I know I can speak for myself that first I was just kind of annoyed. Like I said something along the lines of, I know the season is called Game Changers, but I really wish production would stop changing the game because I want an opportunity to just see these players play. But it is possible that this twist could be interesting in, say, a newbie season, or if we thought about it more and just had more time to, you know, more time in the acceptance stage.
Yeah. I'm trying to think about what could have happened in like a different scenario. Like hypothetically, if this happened in Cambodia as opposed to this game. And so in Cambodia, let's just say that it would have been some version of Angkor and Takeo who went to that tribal council. I mean, how would that have changed the dynamics at all to have that? I mean, would we have ended up seeing maybe Andrew Savage go out of the game at that point because you would have had the combined forces of people from, or would it have been the biggest threat from Takeo taken out? I mean, was that something you would have liked to have seen?
I personally am not crazy about this twist because I do think it sets up the pre-merge boot. Because I think that ultimately, no matter how which combination of tribes ended up going, and this is assuming that this is, say, a Cambodia or a game changer situation where we had initial tribes that then, were swapped into tribes of six, that you're still going to have some breakdown of alliances that's going to result in some strong player going. And whether or not, I mean, maybe everybody likes the merge boot. Maybe they like having the strong physical player, but I think that it doesn't set up for, in my mind, what I think Survivor is all about. And I think that the more complicated social relationships and dynamics don't really come to fruition because it is just about getting an opportunity to weaken the other tribe or taking out a big threat.
I think that you're right about that. I think that the fundamental flaw in this twist is that when teams go to tribal council, they have to weigh what is best for the tribe versus what is best for my alliance / what is best for me. So Sandra is in my alliance, but she's the weakest player in the tribe. What is the right decision to make? Here, it just comes down to how do we take out a threat? How do we weaken the other tribe moving forward? So instead of where we are trying to take out whoever is the weakest player from the game for a particular tribe, we are now changing the criteria that we're using to eliminate somebody. Who is the biggest threat here in the game? And I think it's really problematic, and I think it invites every time a really strong player to go home in this spot.
Yeah, I don't even like this twist.
Yeah.
I do think, though, it would be interesting to have some variation where they're allowed to maybe have the afternoon all together to strategize.
Yeah.
Because I think you're still going to end up with a lot of frantic gameplay, but at tribal council, like it was, you know, I know that there were all these groups and there was all this conversation happening, and I wish Jeff Probst had kind of sat them down and not allowed them to do that. But this almost reminded me of from Survivor Fiji when Michelle Yee went home.
Yes.
Because there was that at the merge, the immunity was played in teams. And so you had teams of five, and the team that lost that she was on, they were not allowed. It was only the five of them that went to tribal council, and they weren't allowed to strategize. Like, they were specifically told not to strategize until they got to tribal council. And she was in a great position and ended up going home.
All right, good. I'm glad you brought up Michelle Yee because I want to talk about that. Let me play you this question from Felipe from Boston.
Hey, Rob and Liana. This is Felipe from Boston, and I wanted to know two quick questions. Is Malcolm the most screwed by a twist player in Survivor history? And what are the chances we get a Malcolm 4.0? Thanks. Bye.
Do you think, is Malcolm the most screwed over by a twist person? Now, first off, now, do you think that Michelle Yee was the most screwed over by a twist person? And then do we turn this into Malcolm versus Michelle Yee?
I would make the argument that I think Michelle Yee was more screwed over just because she was positioned well in the game. She had her alliance with Earl and with Yao Man. And because of that twist, I mean, like, she should have gone deep into the game. And that was, I mean, she got screwed over. Malcolm, on the other hand, was kind of already in a particularly or not so great position.
Yeah. Well, do you think that Michelle Yee would have won the game had she not been taken out by that twist?
Ooh, I mean, that's hard to say because I do think that Earl was just playing such a good game. I mean, I think that he in the end still would have won, but I think there was a slight possibility that she could have won. Whereas, you know, if we accept what we talked about with Malcolm earlier, there was really little to no chance that he had a chance to win.
I'd have to go back to listen to the Fiji evolution of strategy to hear if I thought that that was the most unfair twist or not. I mean, it definitely was a real screw job for Michelle Yee, who was in no danger of going home, had that ended up staying, but because of the way that they broke down the arbitrary tribes, they sort of just like drew numbers for people that don't remember between people from the two tribes post merge, and then said, okay, this group is just going to vote at tribal council, and her alliance was in the minority of that specific group that went to that tribal council. I mean, that was pretty bad. Malcolm, I don't necessarily know if he was screwed by the twist as much as he was screwed by the circumstances.
or screwed by the disaster that is JT.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like that the twist for Michelle Yee really gave her almost no chance in that spot. I think it was maybe it might have been just her and Dreams in that group that was on that side of the alliance. And again, I don't have the numbers in front of me. Whereas the twist was not a good twist, but I don't know necessarily if it was specifically unfair to Malcolm. It sort of invited the teams to take a shot at a good player. So I don't know necessarily if the twist was specifically unfair for Malcolm.
Yeah, because I think if, you know, like, let's say that JT hadn't have said anything, there's still a chance that they would have played the idol correctly and that Malcolm would have gone home. But I don't think that inherently the twist, it put him in maybe a one, I mean, could have been a one and two if they were only considering between, you know, Sandra. Or, I mean, no, it would have been a one and four situation because of how the idol would have been
played.
Yeah,
how does the idol change things, Liana? Because let's just say that Ty didn't find the idol. If this same exact thing happens where then it ends up being 6 votes for Sierra Dawn Thomas, 5 votes for Malcolm, Sierra Dawn Thomas goes home. I think that we're all pretty happy with, like, oh, wow, this was so exciting.
First of all, how dare you? I am a fan favorite game changer Sierra Dawn Thomas fan this season.
So would we have been saying this week that Sierra Dawn Thomas was screwed by the twist?
Yeah, I think I would have been. Okay, well, wait, I have a few thoughts that I'm thinking. First of all, about the idol, I have a challenge for all of the listeners out there. I timed this in episode time. This doesn't include commercials. The idol was found and 10 minutes later it was played. That doesn't include him finding the clue. He like finds a clue and then at like 30 seconds later he finds the idol. And then 10 minutes later he plays it. Is there any other idol that was found and played that quickly in Survivor history?
If you go back to Survivor Micronesia and then also I believe to Survivor Guatemala, I think in both of those instances we have moments where sort of like the last scene we see before Tribal Council with both Gary Hogaboom and with Amanda is like them searching for the idol. And I think in both of those instances, we don't see them actually find it. We see them like, boy, if I don't find this idol, I'm really going to be screwed. And it's sort of like a cliffhanger, and we don't know if they have the idol or not. And both times they play it. So I think in those spots, we do see the idol turn around very quickly. But you're right. This is a very quick turnaround for an idol play in Modern Survivor.
Okay. My made-up challenge that I've just come up with. Those two don't count.
Okay.
They have to find the idol and then how much longer until they play it.
So do you want to officially say Michelle Yee is the most screwed over person for a twist? And does she need to come back in Survivor Unfinished Business?
Oh, yeah. All right. Yeah. Let's put a bookend on that. I say Michelle Yee was the most screwed over player. And when we finally cast, season 50 something Unfinished Business, then yeah, she deserves to come back.
Yes. And then also people let me know in the comments what I said in the evolution of strategy, if I completely shot down that argument in the past. And if so, then please tell me who I said was most screwed over by a twist.
Okay.
This is a long day for me. Okay. You know, I woke up in New York and then I'm recording a podcast in Los Angeles in the same day. So please forgive me if I don't have the complete working faculties of all of my Survivor Twist database.
How dare you?
Sorry. I'm sorry. Okay. What about the question of Malcolm 4.0? What's the chances that he plays again? Do you want to put a number on this, Liana?
On how long before he comes back to play again?
No, give me the percentage chance that we see Malcolm play a fourth time.
You know, it's crazy. There are players that I would have said 0% chance we're going to see again. Players like Suri and maybe Ozzy. And I think Malcolm has become such a staple, even though, you know, we kind of forgot about him because he ended up playing back to back. Because he got so screwed over by this and because he is such a fan favorite, I'm going to say 85% he comes back to play
again. Wow, 85%. I think that's high. Just because, you know, we don't know necessarily how many returnee seasons are going to be in the mix. Now, Survivor did get a renewal for the next season, but I feel like that I think we all were pretty confident there was going to be Survivor 35 and Survivor 36 at the very least. So I just don't know how guaranteed we are that we have another returnee season. If it is a returnee season, if they don't do like all winners as the theme, he has to want to come back. So I will be a little less bullish on it. I'll say it's a 50% chance that we see Malcolm again.
Well, after We Are the Worlds Apart raises all the money to keep Survivor going for all the players that JT screwed over, then he'll be able to come back.
Let's just touch on a couple other quick things about this historic tribal council. What do you think about this in terms of people moving around too much at tribal council?
I have a solution to prevent players from having crosstalks and whispers during tribal councils. How about production install some seatbelts on the tribal council chairs so that players won't be able to just move around and talk? What do you guys think? Thank you.
All right, Liana, you like seatbelts at tribal council.
Why not go full straitjacket? Just strap them down. Don't let them move. I mean, these aren't children. Well, I don't know. I was going to say these aren't children. But maybe the seatbelts are a good idea. But, you know, Jeff, we've seen Jeff in the past keep these players under wraps. So I don't understand what. Well, no, I do understand why. Since he's got crushes on like half of the players over there, he's just going to let them do what he wants. But I really do think that Jeff needs to reel them in, make them sit down. You know, we saw him do this back in Marquesas, right? So we know he's capable of it.
Okay. So you don't think that the seatbelt is necessary?
I don't think the seatbelt is necessary. Plus, you know, they sit on like stumps, and I don't know if you can get those installed on the stumps and how that would work, just kind of the mechanics of the whole thing. Plus that would be like, it would be like a, like if you're getting on an airplane and then you have Jeff do the safety
Should
demonstration.
Should there be a seatbelt light that comes on where, host has turned on the seatbelt sign. That means there is no moving about the tribal council cabin.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Never mind. I'm all in on the seatbelt idea. Ooh. As long as we have the light.
Yes.
This is for your tribal flight entertainment tonight.
And the chime. Okay. Let's take a look at this tribal council from the perspective of the people who were not there. This is a question from Lou.
Hey, Rob and Liana. This is Lou, and this is my first time calling into the podcast. I want to talk about the big winners from Wednesday, and that's the Kavua tribe. Obviously, they gain an advantage by staying up in the numbers and having a big threat and Malcolm eliminated. What I wonder is, was this such a contentious tribal council, but there are irreparable fractures amongst everybody else, and the Tavua tribe stays strong, they can run this all the way to the end? What do you think? Is this a top five baby scenario, or have I just whiffed on my first voicemail? Love to hear your thoughts. Thanks.
Lou, you did not whiff. You did not whiff on the voicemail. Liana, this was a great question, because I started thinking about it, and now, is there some sort of war waging between Nuku and Mana, and Tavua is just going to be able to skate through scot-free?
Well, it's going to be interesting to see if... Do we know if there's another tribe swap coming up?
I don't think we have any sort of advanced knowledge on that.
Okay, because I was just thinking that it really does seem like the tribe dynamics are still occurring on original tribe lines. And because Tavua is so predominantly the original Nuku tribe, I don't really see them bringing in Troizan and having him become part of their group, especially because, you know, coffee is not for closers. So I don't see it necessarily as a Tavua thing, but I do see it as an original Nuku thing being really strong. And since they make up, you know, five of the members of that tribe, that they'll stay together and stay strong.
But don't you think that at Emerge, you're going to see potentially the remaining Mana members really be salty with Brad Culpepper and that whole crew?
Actually, yeah, maybe that's a really good point. Maybe the Tavua members that were on the original Nuku tribe are the ones that are able to stay around longer, because, you know, if the Mana tribe, they're just going to be pissed at Brad Culpepper, you know. So F you, Brad Culpepper, we might hear that this season.
Yeah, it might come back. I mean, you can't imagine that if anybody that's surviving from Mana going into the merge being like, hey, Ozzy is the target number one. You got to think that they're probably going to be still angry with Brad Culpepper, annoyed with JT if he's still around. And I think that maybe there's going to be some hard feelings between JT and Brad Culpepper. So JT's kind of off on an island, I think, and sort of like the opposite of how he left everybody off on a raft last week. So I think that that's a pretty interesting point.
Yeah, and I think, you know, with them not having to go to tribal, with Ozzy, you know, catching the stingray, which I was very excited about. I mean, you know, is he Ken? Is this a Sir Squiddington type situation? Like, I don't know. I don't think he named the Stingray or gave the Stingray any type of title. Like, I don't think it was knighted or anything.
No, he didn't name it.
He didn't name it. Okay. Well, I don't know. Lieutenant Stingray, maybe something like that. They're well fed. They're performing well. And that type of tribe unity is going to be really useful coming into the merge. They're going to feel calm. They're going to feel, you know, powerful. And that might allow them to steamroll through the rest of the game.
Yeah. And other than Troyzan, that group hasn't been to Tribal Council yet through 4 hours of this Survivor season. And I would love to get your take on your girl, Suri, of course, in our preseason Game Changer preview show. You did the long form look back at Suri's Survivor career. I'd love to check in with you and see how you think Suri is faring. She looked like she was in hot water in the first night of the show, but it looks like that she certainly stabilized her game on this new tribe.
Oh, yeah. I was panicking the first two episodes for poor Suri. And thankfully for her, she hasn't had to go to a tribal council, and she has Troyzan now. I mean, obviously he has the idol, but I don't think that he would use that against her in particular if they were to go to tribal council. So I'm feeling really good about her position in the game. And I think you and I talked about this, of kind of where her two problem spots are in Survivor, and it's early when she's not a challenge asset, you know, if her tribe does have to go to tribal council. And then if she can make it through that, she can make the merge and might be able to make a deep run in the game. I mean, she's still going to have, I think, the problem of then not being able to possibly win that final immunity to actually get her, or having somebody that will take her to the end. So I still think that's a problem spot for her, but I'm cautiously optimistic about how things are going for Suri.
Yeah, because I mean, based on the clue that we saw Sierra Dawn Thomas get in terms of the legacy advantage, you have to use this at the final 13 or the final 5, I think it was. If we are saying, okay, that they will merge at 13, that's when they merged at 13 in Survivor Second Chances, you figure she got to get through 3 more tribal councils. I like her chances.
Yeah, I like her chances too. And I think the Tavua tribe is really strong. I like their chances to, I mean, she may not even see tribal council until the merge.
Yeah, especially with Ozzy there. I know that Troyzan choked in that reward challenge, but I think that he's a pretty solid competitor in the challenges. Sarah Lucina is very strong. Andrea is no slouch. Mm-hmm. Zeke, I think, is good in the water. Suri's good at the puzzles. Zeke's great at the puzzles. So I think that it's a pretty solid tribe.
Yeah, I am very happy.
Yeah, so far so good. All right, let's segue back to Sandra. Let's take a question from Ryan from Florida, who wants to talk about her chances moving forward.
Hey, Rob and Liana, this is Ryan from Florida. So for a few episodes now, we've seen Sandra as a decoy boot, yet walk away from tribal without a single vote cast against her. I'm wondering, how much trouble do you think Sandra's in? Or, better yet, how many bars of Ri-Fi would you give at this point?
Okay, this is a very interesting question. In my interview with Richard Hatch, he was very down on Sandra. Then he was citing how, well, people on Twitter are saying, well, she hasn't even gotten a vote yet. And he said that means nothing. From your perspective, Liana, could you give Sandra a letter grade for how she's done this season so far?
If I were to give Sandra a letter grade, I think I would give her, I would say a B. I'm going to give her a solid B. You go, girl. Her cockiness has been talked about as something that's a negative. You know, oh, she's so cocky, she's so cocky. But I think because she's kind of this over-the-top character, it's making the other players less worried about her. My main concern is that I'm worried about the new Nuku tribe going to tribal again. And, you know, JT might be that easy first boot, but I think her Varner then might be in trouble if they do end up having to go again, just because of their lack of strength in challenges.
Mm-hmm.
So it's possible, but if she makes the merge, I don't know. I can see her being this just boisterous character that nobody's worried about. I mean, this is what Sandra does. She just somehow is able to come off as a non-threat and make her way to the end of the game.
I feel like that this talking point that Sandra is playing radically different than she has in her past seasons, I'm just not sure if it's true. I mean, this is the same person who has been wrong many times before in her Survivor career. I mean, she has not been a person that has gone to a flawless victory a la Kim Spradlin, where she hasn't made mistakes along the way. This is a person who has famously gotten into fights, has famously told people off.
You know what? I can get it out too. What the f-?
You know, this is the same person who tells Russell to his face, I'm against you, Russell. She does these things. I mean, this is all part of the Sandra playbook. Maybe she's throwing out the queen stays queen more than she should here and there. But I don't think that fundamentally this is too different of a Sandra than we've seen in the past.
Yeah, I mean, Sandra is Sandra. She's not going to change fundamentally who she is and how she plays the game. I think it is a little bit more over the top, like I said. The cockiness, the fighting. She almost had a cash mate tribal. How about that?
Yes.
She got the how about that. Well, I guess they're already at tribal, so they didn't have to cash her there. Mm-hmm. But she is fundamentally, I think, still, you know, the loud, boisterous Sandra that we've seen before. And whether or not that's still going to be able to carry her all the way through the end of the game, you know, is people not seeing her a threat, just as kind of like crazy, loud, challenge beast.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we're going to see that again.
She's been wrong about things. You know, when Rupert went home, she did not see that coming at that vote. So she doesn't necessarily know everything that's going to happen. She ends up on the wrong side of votes from time to time, but somehow she's able to rebound from that. It just seems like when things go wrong, she's never the person who was targeted at that vote. Like, she's had her allies go out of the game.
Right.
She's had Boston Rob go out of the game. She's had Rupert go out of the game. You know, this has happened to her before.
Yeah, this is exactly. This is what I'm thinking of in Heroes versus Villains. You know, we have her be essentially the last remaining member of, you know, of her kind of her alliance that survives through, and it ends up being between her and Courtney. And she doesn't, we've never really seen her demonstrate a very strong, calm intuition, which I don't know if people think that she is demonstrating this time, but there's a lot of, especially with the Tony vote, she was given a lot of credit of orchestrating that and being this strategic genius. But yeah, I think, Sandra's doing Sandra.
I just think that Sandra is a little more layered than maybe we might have given her credit for, with just saying it's her game is only anybody but me.
Right. And we've seen her push for other people before. You know, it's never always been the just, you know, it's anybody but me strategy. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see the rest of her storyline. It's also interesting to see kind of the moments that are being shown to us from her, because it is very, I think she had a really funny quote about JT it was like, if somebody flips, they're going to get their butt beat when we get back to camp.
Yes.
And then she's saying the queen stays queen and there's all of this. And so we're seeing just a very, you know, particular side of her.
What do you think about the moment at the tribal council where she said, I know one thing, I know I'm not going home tonight. Did you look at that as being cocky, or do you think that that was Sandra bluffing that she may have the hidden immunity idol?
Yeah, I saw that theory that was thrown out there that, you know, maybe this is her just saying, well, I'm not going home because I know I have the idol. I can see it from both ways. I think I would go more from the idol standpoint, because so we just talked about her game is not just anybody but me. Well, this is a self-preservation move. If she can get them to believe that she has an idol, then they're more willing to put the votes on somebody else. And Brad Culpepper had mentioned, you know, we've got two big threats, Malcolm and Sandra. So if Sandra can kind of pull this trick and get the votes off of her and get them onto Malcolm, then at least she'll be safe in some weird case that, you know, Ty was able to find an idol, which, you know, we all know he did.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Liana, just to go back to the original question, how many bars of Rye-Fi right now for Sandra in terms of going out of the game soon?
I would say, I really do think that this tribe is in danger of going to tribal council.
Yes.
I'm going to go with 3 bars of Rye-Fi.
3 bars of Rye-Fi. That if they go to tribal council, you don't think that it'll be sort of an open and shut case to vote JT out?
Yeah, no, I do think it's going to be an open and shut case that JT is going home. But if they go again, I think she goes.
Now, to vote out JT, though, it's almost like a suicide mission in that you're going to be sending a group into that next challenge that is going to be Sandra, Jeff Varner, Aubrey, and Michaela.
Yeah. That's, I just
so you're
don't
almost
think...
intentionally Matt singing at that point. So do they have another person? Like, who is the tight three there that's dictating who is going into the merge potentially? And that's assuming they merge after two more.
Right.
And I think we said 13. I think that right now there's 16 people. So they might go to three more tribal councils, or they might be some sort of a swap to two tribes after two more votes.
Yeah.
Like there was in Cambodia.
So are we making the assumption that then those four are going to go to tribal council?
Yes.
To be them?
Yes. Who's the odd person out of Michaela, Sandra, Aubrey, and Jeff Varner?
Let's see. Well, Aubrey and Sandra, we know for sure don't get along.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be whoever can rope in Varner and Michaela.
Mm-hmm.
And what do we know about the relationships between those two and either Aubrey or Sandra?
Not much.
Yeah. I think Michaela, if she goes with her, we got to win challenges. I think she's burned enough by JT that she'd be willing to get rid of him.
Mm-hmm.
But then come into that, then I think Aubrey and Michaela side together and make a decision of whether or not they want to go with Varner or Sandra.
Yeah, I think that the two better challenge competitors might have to make that call between Sandra or Jeff Varner at a tribal council. Shades of Sandra or Courtney right before the merge in Heroes versus Villains.
Yeah. Oh, how history repeats. Survivor history repeats itself.
Yeah. That would be an interesting scenario if we got that again. And then again, if they decided, okay, well, let's get rid of Jeff Varner, and then Sandra goes on a big run after the merge again. It'd be very exciting. Okay. You touched on this. Let's talk about a theory about the secret to Sandra's success. This is Nathan.
Hello, Rob. It's Nathan calling from New Zealand here. And I believe that I have stumbled upon the secret to Sandra's Survivor success. She has kept this hidden well for a long time, but last night, during that crazy tribal council, she gave a reference to the Catch Me Outside girl, something she could not have known about at the time the season was recorded. Therefore, I conclude that Sandra Dare's time is in fact a Time Lord and has used her time-traveling ability to win two seasons of Survivor. And I think it's fair to say she will use it again this season to win a third. How about that?
Yeah, this was Sandra.
Oh, I'm not worried. I know I'm not going home tonight. How about that?
How about that?
How about that?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, she must be. I mean, you're a wizard, Sandra. Or you're a wizard. No, I can't. Nope, not going to do the accent. It's a far-fetched theory, but I will put on my aluminum foil hat and let's go with it. I mean, come on.
No. Sandra is not a Time Lord, okay?
Oh, why not?
She would have saved Malcolm. She would have not put the votes on Sierra Dawn Thomas if she was a Time Lord. That is fake news. That is an alternative fact that Sandra is a Time Lord. That is not a thing.
Guardian of the Survivor Galaxy.
No, she is not. She's not Time Lord.
Aw, come on.
Yeah.
But I don't know about that.
No, she is not. That's not a thing. That's not happening right now. Okay, let's take a question. This is from Samantha, wants to ask your question about crossing some of your reality TV show streams.
Hi, Rob and Liana. This is Samantha calling from Long Island. I'm a first-time caller, but a long-time listener. I just have one quick question. Who do you guys think would be a better survivor, Bavid or Hilbay? I'm a huge fan of the Hunted Recaps. Thank you guys for doing that. And I just love to know what you guys think. Thanks.
Okay, Liana, who would be the better survivor, a Bavid from Bavid and Emma Slay or Hilbay? And Lee Wilson completely got hosed here. He was at the Live Know-It-Alls and he doesn't even get mentioned.
Oh, poor Lee. Yeah, well, you know you're never supposed to cross the streams, but I guess we can do it here. I would say that... I think David has a more, I don't know. David's kind of scary. Hilbay could be the he might be a merge boot, though. You know, he's like, he's a boxer and he's got the handsome swagger. So I think I'm still going to go with Hilbe.
Yeah, I'll go with Bavid. He could be like a Brad Culpepper type, that he's an attorney, but he's also has this other side of him. So maybe he could be the second coming of the new Brad Culpepper.
Yeah, that's what everyone's excited about. Well, maybe they are now, the second coming of Brad Culpepper. Yes.
And he could talk about the way I look at this game, it's WWED. What would Emily do?
And then he can include it in his next autobiography, yes, that includes his Survivor.
In his next book. Okay.
Right.
Let me give you one more voicemail. This is from Brooks, who has an interesting theory to run past you. What do you think of this, Liana?
Hey, Rob. On Survivor returning player seasons, the best person is always the fourth boot. Please discuss.
Okay. Liana, is this a thing? I've been hearing this from a lot of people. A lot of people are saying the best person on these all returnee seasons is the fourth boot.
That's a thing?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, then that's for Survivor season, 60-something. It's the fourth boot season. Oh, Suri was a fourth boot, right?
Was she in Heroes versus Villains? I'm trying
in
to
Heroes
think.
Heroes versus Villains.
Was it Suri? I guess so. So you had what? Sugar, Stephanie, Randy, Suri. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Then yes.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. Done. Done deal.
That is a great thing. Yeah.
Wait, who is, let's see, what are the other returning players? Are we counting fans versus favorites?
No, that
or
wasn't
just all returning.
Yeah, just all returnee seasons.
Oh, okay. So then it's you, Suri,
Jeff
and
Varner
then
from the
oh,
Second
Jeff
Chances.
Varner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Mount yeah. Rushmore of fourth boots.
Yeah. Carve me outside. How about that?
Yeah, there you go. I like that. Liana, was there anything else from this week's show that you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, there's actually one other thing I wanted to talk about, and some people may scoff at this, but just listen. Just take a moment and listen. Ciara Dawn Thomas is playing a good game. Okay, now that you take a moment, breathe, recover.
I mean, is that a hot take? I mean, there is the initial shock over why is she here? But I think that we're at the phase where if we're still like, oh, what? I can't believe that she's still here. I mean, I think that you have a fundamental misunderstanding of how these all-star seasons work. I mean, you can't be judging people by what they did in their first game. I mean, we're talking about Brad Culpepper is calling the shots. We're talking about Ciara Dawn Thomas is like a key cog here. Haley Ford is a big factor in this game. So I don't think that we could be looking at how they did in their original seasons at this point in time.
Well, I think that there's still a lot of preconceived notions, and I think Brad Culpepper is somebody that a lot of people are coming around on. But I want to bring up Ciara specifically because I think that Brad got a lot of credit in this episode, but I think that Ciara also deserves some credit for this whole situation. And there's some evidence that demonstrates that she has some intuition and has a really strong social game. That I just want to point out, I'm a detail-oriented person, and I have some evidence.
Okay, go
May
for
I
it. What do you have?
Make my Brad Culpepper / Haley Ford lawyer speech.
Okay.
Okay. So first, when they get back, this is after Tribals, the very beginning of the episode. Ciara Dawn Thomas is the one that's comforting Ty, that he had to vote off Caleb. She's the one that comes up with the idea for taking out Malcolm, that it's going to weaken their tribe. He's a strong physical competitor. Also, Malcolm was, on the original Mana tribe, and she was on Nuku. She also, and this is really subtle, and I didn't catch it until it was my second time watching, but Ciara gets Ty to admit to having the idol. So Ty says something like, I was thinking, and then Debbie just starts blabbing. Ciara shushes Debbie and goes straight back to Ty, and Ty immediately tells that group that he has the idol. And then lastly, when she's at Tribal, she is able to tell that she thinks it's her, and Brad Culpepper said, no, it's not, before JT even tells Brad. Now, it's possible that everybody was saying, oh, I think it's me. But I think that there are some things that we're seeing in the episode that demonstrate that she is a strong player.
Yeah, I definitely think that she is the connective tissue between Brad and Haley, and I think that she is looked at as certainly by Brad in terms of the other people from Nuku as his number one person, as opposed to Ty or Debbie, who are both very, very quirky. I think that Ciara seems like a pretty stable ally, and that's not a horse pun or anything like that. She's just somebody who, where's she going? She's a solid ally. She's not flipping on you. She didn't flip on Dan Foley.
Exactly. Yeah. Well,
she's not going anywhere.
She's not going anywhere. She's roped in her allies. Also, not a horse pun, a rodeo pun, I guess. But I think that her being so close to Brad, and if this tribe can reconnect, if they can reconnect with the Tavua tribe and their original tribe members, I think that she is such a solid player that she's going to make a deep run into the game.
Okay. All right. I don't think that's a hot take at all.
Okay. Well, good. The Liana with the lukewarm / tepid takes.
Yeah. To all of the Sierra Dawn Thomas deniers out there, how do you like them apples? Okay. All right.
The horses really like the apples.
The horses do like the apples. Okay. Speaking of apples, this episode of the Survivor Feedback Show is sponsored by Nature Box, Liana. Let me tell you about some delicious, better for you Nature Box than all of this other junk food that's around here. When you want a snack and all you can find is junk food, forget about relying on your self-control to resist the temptation. Start snacking healthier with Nature Box. Nature Box makes great tasting snacks. They send them right to your door, free from all of the artificial colors and artificial flavors and sweeteners, all of the bad stuff that you don't want. Liana, they sent me some peanut butter pretzels recently, which were absolutely fantastic.
Ooh, that sounds good. They should have that as a reward instead of coffee, which I don't understand. Isn't coffee, why would you want coffee when you're out there on Survivor? Isn't it a diuretic?
Yeah, but I think that you have so little energy on Survivor that yeah, you like the pick-me-up, just like the pick-me-up you get from the pistachio power clusters at Nature Box. And I'm telling you, you could have a peanut butter pretzel with a cup of coffee. It's lovely. Nature Box has just made their service even better, just like Sierra Dawn Thomas is even better than before. You could order as much as you want, as often as you want, without a minimum purchase. Just go to naturebox.com, check out the whole catalog. With NatureBox, you never get bored with new snacks every month, inspired by real customer feedback. And if you ever try a snack you don't like, NatureBox will replace it for free. Right now, save even more. NatureBox has a special offer, 50% off your first order when you go to naturebox.com/RHAP. That's naturebox.com/RHAP for 50% off your first order. naturebox.com/RHAP, where the snacks that are supposed to be salty are not too salty, like all the people that got burned by Malcolm going out on the twist this week. They're too salty.
Probably a little too salty.
Okay. All right. So are you ready to get into some of the Survivor social media, Liana?
Yes, let's do it.
Take it away, Ryan Elder.
Tweets, baby, tweets. Survivor tweets. They're better than a twisted tribal, getting them all up out of their seats. Tweets.
Yes, okay.
Ooh.
Very excited to talk about some Survivor social media. Here's one from Jeff Varner, who said, as long as she's there, I'm not the weakest. I'm not the target. Sandra is my shield. What do you think about that strategy about Jeff Varner keeping Sandra? When we talk about a meat shield, what's the opposite of a meat shield, of keeping somebody around who's weaker than you?
Oh, man. I don't know.
A vegetable shield?
Mean, but yeah, like a exactly. It's a vegetable shield. Yeah. What's a vegetable that nobody likes? I don't know. The sea cucumber shield.
Sea cucumber shield? I don't know if that rolls off the tongue. What about a beet shield?
No. Beet shield. Okay, yeah, the beet shield.
Yeah, because I watched them eat those beets on Big Brother Canada the other night, and that was really gross.
Oh, man, that challenge.
And it's also,
worst.
It's a double meaning, because beet, like the vegetable,
you
but also,
beat your
yeah, who can you beat?
Yeah. Oh, that's perfect.
Beet shield. I love it.
Okay, perfect. Okay.
Speaking of Jeff Varner, one of the other survivors was on social media discussing one of their quotes. Randy Bailey said, I would pay good money to watch at Jeff Varner soil himself. Hashtag Survivor Game Changers. Here was Jeff Varner talking when he went to go vote.
If you pull out an idol, I will soil myself.
Now, did that happen?
Well, I think technically, because Ty pulled out the idol, then it didn't happen. But I don't know. I don't know if they offer like Depends out on Survivor, because yes, that would be very messy.
You know, during the live know-it-alls, Liana, when that line came up, I turned to Stephen Fishback. I said, hey, he's stealing your bit.
It was her booby pants. Yes. Aww.
Was Jeff Varner suffering from extreme gastrointestinal distress?
That's right. Yeah, exactly. It was too much coffee.
Yeah, I guess so. They got the pitcher of iced coffee. That is the thing.
Yeah, yeah. I, you know, it can sometimes move your bowels. So
yeah, maybe you want to pair that with a banana.
Right, right. Yeah, or some beets.
Okay. All right. Candace Cody, MD. I love hearing from Candace Cody. She says, once again, JT with some brilliant communication to the other team, along with a high quality idol disaster. Good times.
Was it sarcasm?
Yeah, yeah. I think that Candace, I think if we go back to Heroes vs. Villains, she was not high on JT the first time around. She did not think this was a great idea to give the idol away. I think that her and Amanda only went along with this plan to give the idol to Russell, that they got it out of JT's hands. They were like, all right, well, at least JT doesn't have the idol anymore.
Yeah, we don't have to worry about him. Yikes. Yeah. When you'd rather have someone on the other tribe have the idol than your own tribe mate, I think that then that really spells disaster.
Speaking of Russell Hance, boy, all of these comments are all segueing together so nicely. Russell Hance on Twitter talked about how he did not enjoy the reward this week. He said, hey, at Jeff Probst, bring back good rewards. These rewards suck these days. I don't even like coffee.
Well, it's a good thing he's not out there playing then.
Yeah, he doesn't even like coffee. Just like,
I don't even like the Boston Red Sox.
Oh, can you imagine when the next reward challenge is, two tickets to the Boston Red Sox.
I don't even like going to Boston. And then I got to drink Dunkin' Donuts. I don't even like them.
That's right. It's two tickets, a full flight paid for, two tickets to the Boston Red Sox and unlimited Dunkin' Donuts.
Priceless. Okay. Eliza was back on Twitter this week. I guess she was not watching in real time, but she caught up. She said, finally watching Survivor. This is gut wrenching. Knowing the outcome already, I'm so unhappy with how this plays out. We were robbed.
Is Malcolm going to be the next like Rob God?
Rob Goddess. I don't know. Yeah. Is that a thing?
Well, like Rob.goddess or R.oddgoddess, right? That's a thing.
Oddus. Is that what?
Oddus?
Yes. She also says, all caps, JT and his big effing mouth does it again. Boy, why is Eliza bitter with JT?
Maybe she's bitter because now everybody's going to forget about the stick.
Hmm.
Like when they think of bad idol play, stealing the spotlight.
Yeah. Also, Eliza said, it's soul crushing. Haley tells them to go Brad. Sandra is overconfident. Malcolm's final words break my heart.
Oh, his final words. That was so sad. I'm not a crier, but I almost cried with him. That was devastating. I can see where she's coming from.
Yeah, very sad about the whole thing because your heart really goes out to Malcolm. I always identify with these players that just feel like they wanted to be there so badly that I always can identify and relate to that.
Oh, well, it seems like she was also going through the stages of grief, so.
Yes, as she's tweeting.
We got the anger and then the yes. sadness, so.
Okay. And then are you ready for the everybody's favorite game, which is back this week? Are you ready to talk some Rupert tweets?
Oh, my goodness.
Tweets, baby, tweets, Rupert tweets. They're better than something that happened on Survivor. Rupert tweets.
Yes.
Oh, man. I heard I stayed away from Rupert tweets because I knew I was going to be coming on voicemails, but I did hear that he may have become self-aware.
Yes, yes. So while I was at the live know-it-alls the other night, I guess that Rupert was tweeting the episode. First time that I believe he's even tweeting in 2017. And I don't know what people are responding to Rupert, but that he seems to be curious about what's going on here. Rupert, the real Rupert, tweeted out the other night,
someone explain what at Rob Sesternino is doing to my tweets.
Yes.
Yes. Well, the day of reckoning is here. He finally found out.
Yes. Okay. So Rupert seems to be at least tangentially interested in what's going on. He then wrote to me, hey, at Rob Sesternino, text me. I want to see if I can recognize my own tweet. Okay. I don't have Rupert's cell phone number, so I can't text Rupert. I did send Rupert a direct message, but I have not yet gotten a response.
Oh, that's too bad. Maybe he didn't recognize his own direct message.
Maybe. Or maybe he only logs onto Twitter every Wednesday night. So maybe I need to go ahead. But I would love to have Rupert on, certainly to talk to him about this season and maybe even to play a game of the Rupert tweets with him. But so we have the Rupert bot, which is tweeting away, getting smarter and smarter every week. And then we had the real Rupert this week, Liana. So I'm going to give you three tweets from the Rupert bot and one real tweet from Rupert. And your job this week is to find the real Rupert Bonham tweet.
All right, let's do
okay,
it.
Okay, you're up to this?
I'm up to this. Let's hope Skynet situation hasn't happened and the Rupert bot hasn't hasn't gotten some skills.
Okay, here we go. Tweet number one.
That's the most good tribal council I've ever seen against Debbie.
Okay?
Okay.
Number two,
Haley has got to be feeling good about this.
Okay.
Okay. All right. I got it.
I'm removing hashtags from this. I'm just giving you the tweets. And I then
oh, because the hashtag survivor, hashtag survivor, hashtag survivor would give it away.
Yes. Sometimes. Okay. Tweet okay. Number three, all caps, inches, 2 exclamation points. Okay.
Okay, yeah. And then yeah. Tweet we all know Rupert's love of the English system, so.
And tweet number four.
Laura and I like that tribe. We are glad they won.
Okay, all right. So let me break this down. Do I think that Rupert cares about Debbie or Haley? I don't think so. Maybe Debbie, but I don't think he cares about Haley. And then what was the third one? Just inches?
Inches.
Okay, I don't think it's three. I think I'm going to go with four because he likes Laura too, right? He's going to include his wife in this.
Yes.
When I play Survivor, I always ask myself, WWLD. What would Larry David do?
Well, just curb your enthusiasm, right?
Yes. Okay, so you go with number four?
All right, I'm going to go with number four.
Ding, ka-ching, ka-ching.
Yes, that was the real Rupert tweet. So, boy, that would be so fun to get Rupert on here and then ask him things that he tweet. Did he tweet this or not?
I think you have to.
I think it'd be fun. Yeah, that'd be great. I'd love to talk to Rupert. And then again, you know, he played with JT, played with Sandra. So, you know, yeah, played on a tribe with Suri. So that he definitely has a history with some of these players that are out there.
Yeah, I'm excited for the Rupert tweet level insight on all the players.
Yeah. And Rupert Bot is getting like really just on Rupert, real Rupert's heels with these tweets. It's almost like tweeting things very similar to the real Rupert. So every time real Rupert tweets, Rupert Bot is getting smarter.
I mean, those first two, like, they were grammatically correct. I remember when the Rupert Bot first came out and it was just, oh, this is easy. This makes no sense.
Yeah. Well, don't give it too much credit. I'm sort of cherry picking a little bit from okay. The Rupert Bot.
Malcolm second asparagus and such a finale.
That was Rupert, right?
That was the bot.
Okay. All right. Good thing that wasn't a question.
Yes. Also, the Rupert bot said, "Hey, Sierra, text me. I want to see if I can recognize my darn tweet."
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So I don't know. He's learning from the real Rupert, but then he's saying things to other Survivor players.
Oh, no.
All right. Liana, very fun to go through everything. I hope that maybe people, you know, we've gotten them through their stages of grief dealing with the loss of Malcolm. Hopefully we've gotten people to laugh again following a very dramatic week of Survivor. Are you feeling any better?
I am. I'm feeling better. I'm smiling. You know, if there's we dealt with Bavid and Emma Slate going home early. We started a support group. If you still need more help, you know, we're here for you. Reach out to us and you know, hopefully we can laugh at some more Rupert tweets.
Hopefully. I know you and Mike Bloom and Brent will be laughing away as you recap another season of RuPaul's Drag Race, which is now on the VH1.
So yeah, we're very excited. It's a new season, it's all new queens. We did a preview
show. Queens stay queens.
And the queen, one queen will stay queen. And no, Sandra is not on this season, although that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, she'd be a good judge. judge to come in for all of that. All right. So, of course, you could follow Liana on Twitter at Liana Boris.
Yeah, that is correct.
That is correct.
That is correct.
All right. So we've got a lot more coming up that we have on Monday. We will get back into the Wiggle Room with Josh Wiggler. We missed a week on the Wiggle Room last week. We will be making up for it because Josh Wiggler will be here in the studio with me for this week's edition of the Wiggle Room. And then I will get into why Malcolm lost. We'll try to pick up the pieces one more time with David Bloomberg and go through all of that. And then we will get back to a regular edition of the Know-It-Alls this Wednesday night. And I think we have another fun week of podcasts coming up for you guys with our guests this Thursday and Friday on the recap and the voicemail edition. So very excited about that, Liana.
Ooh, it should be a great time.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun. Thanks so much to all of the new patrons who came on board following the live Know-It-Alls. Always very excited to see people who came out to the show and then they decide to come on to become patrons. So thank you guys so much for that. To find out more about the benefits of becoming a patron and see what we have going on over there, you can check that out at robisawebsite.com/patron. Liana, anything else?
Oh, okay. So one more thing before we close out. I want to point out, you know, I know all of us are sad about Malcolm going home, but he just has such a great sense of humor. In the Gordon Holmes interview, he called Beast Mode Cowboy, Donkey Mode Cow Weenie. So if there are any of you that are still dealing with losing Malcolm, just think of Donkey Mode Cow Weenie.
Donkey Mode Cow Weenie. Now, okay, yeah. This is interesting because this was not where I thought you were going with this, Liana.
Oh, well, there was another thing that I could have gone with from the Gordon Holmes interview, but I think I'd rather not talk about that.
Yes. Okay. Because I thought it was a different weenie that you were going to mention.
Yes. No, the Troyzan weenie can stay in its package.
Well, apparently it can't because Malcolm was extremely impressed with Troyzan in his interview with Gordon Holmes.
Yeah. Well, maybe Troyzan's not my favorite.
Yes. And actually, this brings up a new segment that I want to do on the podcast, which is my Troyzan quote of the week. And of course, this was last week's entry for my favorite Troyzan quote of the week, talking to Andrea.
She's a little devil, that one.
But here is Troyzan after Ozzy caught the stingray.
Oh my God. That's a big old fish, bro.
That's a big old fish, bro. Yeah. And maybe Malcolm said likewise.
That's right. It's a big old sea cucumber.
Yeah, bro.
Bro.
There you go.
Do we want to do a hashtag?
Oh, yeah, the hashtag. Yeah. I feel like that I loved Carve Me Outside, but I feel like that Beat Shield has to be the way to go.
Yeah, I think we got to go with Beat Shield.
Okay. Now, is it B-E-E-T Shield or B-E-A-T Shield?
I think it's B-E-E-T.
See, I like beat, like B-E-A-T, because it's like, who can you
B-E-A-T?
Beat? Yeah.
That's right. Okay. All right. Yeah. We can go with B-E-A-T.
But the emoji should be a beat. Is there a beat
right,
emoji?
Exactly. Some beat vegetable, emoji? I'm sure, is close enough.
Yes.
We get a bitmoji, beatmoji?
No.
Okay, so yeah, B-E-A-T, shield.
Okay, the beat shield. All right. Okay. So, Christoph, Liana, always so fun to podcast with you. Hopefully, we can do it again soon. Looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say in the comments, and we'll talk to you again soon. Bye.